This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back in on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Mark Grody with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Hello. 312-644-6767. If you'd like, textable as well at 670-11. A lot of people disagreeing with my point that it doesn't matter. If you have an elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, why do you need elite receivers and elite tight ends? Yeah, it's fun and probably makes his life easier, but the point is he's elite, he's great, he makes other players around him great, and it's a nice matchup. The reason why a lot of teams like the Patriots and the Packers historically have not gone out and gotten those elite guys in the first round is because they depend on their elite quarterback to make everybody else better so they can put their resources into other areas. From the 815, the point is if you have an elite quarterback and you go get a talented receiver, you might go to the Super Bowl, and that should be your goal every year. Sure, you might go to the Super Bowl every year, though, when you have Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and mediocre receivers. It's just a fact. I mean, it's just that's the way it works with these elite guys, and I'm just tired of everybody enabling Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers doesn't even have to whine about this. Everybody's saying, well, what's Aaron Rodgers going to say about Jordan Love being drafted? He doesn't have to say a damn thing because 100% of the opinions that I've heard are people crying for and sympathizing with Aaron Rodgers, that how could you not get him more weapons? How dare you? You know, last year building up the defense, how dare they do that? That's what teams with good offenses do. They build the defense, a la Bill Belichick and what he's done with Tom Brady, and how many elite receivers has the GOAT had throughout the years in Tom Brady? Not a whole lot this side of Randy Moss. From the 269, hello, Aaron Rodgers will play with the Bears or New England in 2 years. Bears QB contracts will be up. Kind of makes sense if you think about it. I mean, I'm only laughing because I feel like this person that texts me that is kind of like feeling like that's a slam dunk, that will happen, that Aaron Rodgers will pull the Brett Favre to Minnesota and Aaron Rodgers will end up with the Bears in a couple of years. The Bears quarterback situation is very interesting, obviously, going into this year. So when the Bears signed or made the trade for Nick Foles, I was still saying that I thought that Mitchell Trubisky would be the starting quarterback on day one. And I even set out the plan for the Bears because they like it when I set out plans for them. The plan from me was going to be have Mitchell Trubisky tell him backstage, all right, look, we're going to give you one more shot. And this is barring having like a horrible preseason. Like if he just had an inept preseason, then this wouldn't happen. But this is the plan that I set out for the Bears. I said, you're going to get 3 games, Mitchell Trubisky. You get 3 games no matter what to get it right. This is the last call for a guy that we invested in heavily to be our starting quarterback and our franchise quarterback for the next decade. So we're going to give you one last try to be our starting quarterback. But you get 3 games. You get 3 games. And if it looks anything like it did last year and even parts of 2018, then we're bringing in our closer. And the closer is Nick Foles. And Nick Foles has proven in his career to be a great second-string quarterback. That's not hyperbole. He is a great backup quarterback. So it's the best of both worlds in that predicament. Because if Mitchell Trubisky succeeds, then that's good. Everybody's happy. Everybody gets paid, and the Bears are good again. And if it doesn't work, then you have the best backup quarterback maybe in the history of football, considering the guy won the MVP in the Super Bowl, to be your QB. So that was the blueprint that I had set out, what I thought maybe they would do. But then things changed when the Bears did finally speak. I don't remember what the circumstance was, but we heard from Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy about what the Bears' plan was going into training camp this year. The plan is that the two will compete. Supposedly, it will be a 50-50 competition with neither of the QBs having the edge. It's a clean slate. It is a competition. But the one thing that they said that made me believe that it will now be Nick Foles' job is that they said that they're not going to sugarcoat what is going on, that they're going to be dead honest about what is happening. And when they said that, when they used words like that, and I'm just paraphrasing, when they use words like that, that said to me that that message for right there, hard conversations, real conversations, that message is for Mitchell Trubisky, that be prepared for us to put our arm around you and say, you know what, Nick Foles is going to be our quarterback going into this season. So, and the fact, too, that they were so transparent and open about what, at least Matt Nagy, about what he needs to work on, and that it is quality over quantity in terms of his studies. It is, again, reading defenses, telling Mitch that he has to be better than me, as in Matt Nagy, be better than me at knowing what you're doing out there. And it's kind of like, look, unless you show us in a very concrete way in Lake Forest this year, where training camp will be held, then it's going to be Nick Foles. So I do think the starting quarterback for the Bears will be Nick Foles. And the opinions have been all over the place. I will say this, that as far as the opinions on the Bears quarterback have been concerned, they've been split. I would say that more people than not say Nick Foles, but it's 50-50 on who people in the know think will be the quarterback. Who people want to be the quarterback is a totally different story than that. By the way, back to the 224 and back to our other topics. As a dude, Brady had Branch, Gronk, Moss, Edelman, Welker, Aaron Hernandez, Dante Stallworth, and more. Here's what I'll say to that. Out of that group, I'd say Gronk and Moss are made men, self-made, like they'd be good anywhere. The rest of that crew, I don't know. I think Tom Brady had something to do with Deion Branch's success. I think the same thing for Wes Welker. I think the same thing for Aaron Hernandez. I even think the same thing for Dante Stallworth. I think you got to take a little closer look there. 224 area code. I think that Tom Brady made some of those guys household names. Really? Edelman? I don't know, man. Gronk and Moss, obviously, I will give you those guys, and it'd be silly not to. But the rest, I mean, that's my point, man. Elite quarterbacks turn good receivers into at least the perception that they are great, and I think you kind of fell for it a little bit there. From the 414, Nick Foles will actually make Mitch worse. Mitch will crumble under the stress of competition. That's Mitch's whole problem. Is he mentally weak? If they thought he was mentally weak, the Bears wouldn't be coming out here and with a megaphone basically and saying that there's going to be competition for him and that be ready for some real conversations. So, no, I do not think that Mitch Trubisky is mentally weak. I just think that the Bears' theory under Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace is when they drafted Mitchell Trubisky, they were going to coddle him like all organizations do for top five quarterbacks. We are going to do everything possible to make you comfortable here, even if that means bringing up a non-threatening backup quarterback in Chase Daniel and to a different degree Tyler Bray. We're going to make this franchise about you. We're going to make you as comfortable as possible. Of course you're going to do that. That's all the Bears were doing with Mitchell Trubisky. Now they're not doing that anymore. Now they're saying there is going to be competition. They are not committing to, at least publicly yet, on any kind of decision for a fifth-year option. They have until May 4th to make that happen. So I think the the weak mentally theme out there has been wrong. I just think it's what you do with a guy who you think is your franchise player. Obviously, Mitch was not at the point where he was going to give input on how to run things. But of course, they were going to coddle him. Of course, they were going to give him every tiny little bit of comfort they can. But now they have pulled the chair out from under him in that regard. And it's you know, every may the best man win. That's what it comes down to. The other part now is that I did think that the Bears would draft a quarterback in this draft. I really thought that would occur because I did look at this as the perfect opportunity for the Bears to develop somebody, because there would be no pressure coming into this year to start him. It's not like when they had John Fox and Mike Glennon and Mitch Trubisky in his rookie year where three games in, everybody was calling for Trubisky. And, of course, that's what's going to happen when you have the number two overall pick for whom you traded up to get. But this was a perfect year to go get a guy, bring in a quarterback quietly, because it's going to be Nick Foles. It's going to be Mitchell Trubisky. Yeah, because I do believe both will at some point in time quarterback games for the Bears this year. Barring any kind of, you know, crazy injuries, that guy, whether it was going to be Jake Fromm or Jacob Eason or Jalen Hurts, they could just quietly develop and then be around in a couple of years when or if the cupboard is to be bare in the QB room. So I'm a little surprised they didn't do that, just because it would have been a perfect circumstance. The guy I liked, and you know if you've been listening to me, the dude I liked the most out of this bunch in terms of the gettable guys, I mean the elite guys, no, forget that. But Jacob Eason, he was the guy that I had circled just because I knew he was falling, and he ended up with the Indianapolis Colts, where I guess he'll be penciled in as the third-string quarterback, right? But I guess, look, Jacob Eason at a Jacob Eason last year might have been a first-round quarterback. Jacob Eason 5, 6, 7 years ago, he was the prototype quarterback that you want to lead your team in terms of the size. I mean, 6'6 guy, the strong arm to go with it, the prototypical pocket quarterback, and those are starting to go away in this version of the National Football League. Like he's actually turning into, and it sounds ridiculous to say about a 6'6 guy with a canyon, he's turning into an old school type of quarterback, but I guess I'm still stuck on that type of guy. And Eason was it. So I'll be, his career is one that I will look forward to watching. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to make a good quarterback in the NFL. I'm sure it'll be interesting to watch him in Philadelphia. Obviously, they have Carson Wentz. But, hey, man, you know Eagles. Maybe you don't know Eagles fans. Eagles fans, they're very passionate. And the second Carson Wentz trips up a little bit, they'll be calling for Jalen Hurts. And I don't think he's going to make a great NFL quarterback. And I don't know about Jake Fromm. I like what Hub said about Jake Fromm yesterday when we were doing the show. Jake Fromm going to the Buffalo Bills. I think, or what Hub said about Jake Fromm that I agree with, is that he is a guy who is going to be a perfect backup quarterback, who is a game manager. Remember that dirty word that we use talking about quarterbacks? Jake Fromm, game manager type of guy. I agree with that. Like, and he's really smart too. So I don't know. He's the type of guy who could probably be like a starter for a season until the next guy comes along, or a perfect backup quarterback. I know a lot of people are thinking Chase Daniel, but no, better than Chase Daniel probably, but something in that same area. From the 708, wrong. Eason is just bad. He's not old school. He's just awful at quarterback. I think a guy with the body type that he has, the arm that he has, and the ability that I think he has, I think can be coached into a really good quarterback in this league. The reason, from the 414, the reason Eason and Fromm fell is because they don't play like Mahomes, and it's a copycat league. Yeah, that's my point, and maybe I didn't say it well, that right now it is in this league, people are finally realizing that the guys that are mobile quarterbacks, that these are legitimate quarterbacks, guys who could roll out of the pocket. Hell, that's the idea with Mitchell Trubisky. Mitchell Trubisky is a mobile quarterback. You could see why. I mean, Ryan Pace had the right idea in going out and getting Mitchell Trubisky because he is the type of guy that would fit into, obviously, this Bears offense and this type of NFL, too. So it all makes sense. But, hey, man, don't try to take away my Jacob Eason fun. Don't rain on that parade. We'll stand by and wait to see what he becomes. But it would have been nice to see the Bears pick up a quarterback. We'll see what happens in terms of the rest of this offseason. But right now, it would appear that quarterback's room is set. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we return, we are going to talk more about the Bears, more in depth about the draft picks that they made with Chris Emma of 670thescore.com. Arif Hassan will be with us at 5. He covers the Vikings for The Athletic. They made 15 picks in the draft. Greg Gabriel will join us at 6. Jim Schwantz will be on with us at 6:20. Yes, we are going to talk about The Last Dance, the 90s Bulls documentary. I got some things on Dennis Rodman I got to get off of my chest. And I also want to talk to you about all opinions on this documentary that are not from Chicago. People from Chicago who watched Michael Jordan, I can't stand some of the network opinions that have occurred, and I will run some of those down later on the show. But more Bears talk is next. I'm Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The amount of time we spent with him, the amount of times, you know, obviously being in close proximity to Notre Dame too, and the relationships we have there, his football IQ is off the charts. His work ethic is off the charts. His preparation is off the charts. So all those things, there's no question in our mind that we'll be able to pick up this offense extremely fast because of all those traits.
That is Bears general manager Ryan Pace talking about the Bears' second-round draft pick, the tight end out of Notre Dame, Cole Kmet. I'm Mark Grody here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score with you until 7 o'clock tonight. We'll take more of your calls a little bit later on at 312-644-6767. Textable at 670-11. From the 219, why don't you like Jalen Hurst? All he did is win. So did Tim Tebow. Let's see. From the 616, the Bears are going to be open and honest with the Chicago media and Bears fans. Roses will grow in cement. Wow, you're starting to sound like one of those new network guys with your favorite candidate. I don't understand what that texture is talking about. From the 312, is Jacob Eason related to Tony Eason, who was the quarterback for the Patriots who played the Bears in the Super Bowl? And I think a lot of people actually remember Tony Eason even more for having been an Illinois quarterback when Illinois used to produce all sorts of really talented QBs. The answer to that question is, I don't know. Mike Chen will do the fact-checking on that. Mike, you got to find out if Jacob Eason, I don't even know if they're spelled the same, honestly, if Jacob Eason is related to Tony Eason. I feel like we would know that if he was. So I'm going to go ahead and say it is doubtful.
Yeah, real quick, looking at his Wikipedia page, nothing on there.
Let's just go ahead
No. Corrected. I moved down a little bit, and I found it. His father's Tony. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Are you serious? How did we not? I feel like that should have come up somewhere in my readings. But
wrong Tony,
okay.
Though. So there's two Tony Easons. His father played at Notre Dame.
Oh.
But the other Tony Eason played for the Patriots. So different Easons, same father, though. His name, first
name.
Wait.
Now I'm confused.
Okay, his father, Tony. Uh-huh. Jacob Eason's father, his name is Tony. Also,
yeah, he played where?
He played at Notre Dame.
Okay, so it's not the Illinois New England Patriots.
Correct.
Tony Eason.
Right. Same name, different person.
Okay. I'm glad that we got that figured out. We were moving into like cousin once removed territory there. I thought it was the whole thing was going to come completely undone. 312-644-6767. Oh, wait. No. Chris, Emma, I didn't forget about you. What's going on, man?
I'm worried your brain's too much in a blender to continue with this interview, Mark.
After that conversation? Jesus.
I have no idea what just happened to you there.
Well, it started off very simply, and it was a good question by the texter, you know, asking, is Jacob Eason's father, I don't know if you remember Tony Eason, but he played for Illinois, he played for New England, and he and Steve Grogan were the Patriots quarterbacks, and I know you don't remember that, Emma, because you're a lot younger than me, but anyway, before I go full grobber on you, how you doing? It's Chris Emma, who covers the Bears for 670thescore.com on a daily basis.
Hi, Mark.
You can read all his good stuff on 670thescore.com. Hi, Chris. Chris, I don't even know where you want to start. What did you have you done the proverbial grade the Bears draft thing? Or if you haven't, do you have a letter grade that you would like to give to the Bears for their draft?
You know, I had different expectations of what they could do and probably what they should have done compared to what actually played out. So I don't know if it's fair to give a grade based on here's what I thought. I mean, I could have been totally wrong and Ryan Pace could be totally right in things. I expected, Mark, that they would have been trading either pick 43 or 50 and stockpiling a little bit more draft capital. And I asked about it Friday night after the Bears selected Cole Kmet and then Jalen Johnson if Pace was intrigued by the idea of trading down. And his answer was when they looked at the board at 43 and they looked at the board at 50 and saw those two respected players, they didn't want to trade down. They felt comfortable taking it. It matches the philosophy we've seen from Ryan Pace, where he has those convictions about players he feels strongly enough, and he's willing to take them where they are. I think he probably should have been looking to move down for Cole Kmet, who would have fallen probably to the mid-50s at the very least. And you're able to try to get something better in terms of a later pick. You could get a third-round pick in addition. Look for some more strengths, some more players you can add on through this. Same with Jalen Johnson. I think Jalen Johnson was ready to fall beyond 50 because of the concerns over his shoulder from March. Look, this is a completely different draft. And teams, red flags are going to be even redder when you're talking about these injuries, and especially one after the combine when you have shoulder surgery in March. Teams aren't able to commit to an injured player the way that they would in normal times where you're able to get doctors in there. So that's a long way of answering. I think the Bears could have been a little bit more aggressive in seeking trades and seeking more draft capital. I think we'll find out about these two players, in particular the second-round guys. You got some impact starters, some players who address key needs. So I think they did fine there, but I think Pace could have been more proactive.
Were you surprised the Bears did not draft a quarterback?
Yes. Yeah, when Ryan Pace first arrived in January of 15, he spoke of a philosophy of aggressively pursuing the quarterback position in the draft. And he understands that he's used the term before, the most important position in sports, and they've drafted one in 6 years. That's Mitchell Trubisky. And obviously they made a very firm commitment and a very bold conviction on Trubisky, but look, I mean, they should have been looking at somebody else as a developmental player. And all due respect to Tyler Bray, who's a nice, experienced backup there, he's not a developmental guy. Trubisky is the only developmental quarterback on this roster. And I think in the next couple weeks, you're going to be hearing that, I guess in the next week from now, you're going to hear he's not going to be getting that fifth-year option. In all likelihood, he's not going to be on the roster in 2021. And the Bears don't have anything developing behind the scenes. When you have all these quarterback coaches in Hallis Hall, all these guys committed to Trubisky right now, and Matt Nagy and John DeFilippo and Bill Lazor and Dave Ragone, they have enough coaches. They have four coaches and one developmental quarterback. They should have been looking for that guy. Ryan Pace said that the board did not align, but they also haven't signed one in free agency either here, an undrafted guy. So I don't know if they're still in that mode of trying to protect Trubisky with that third stringer and having Tyler Bray there as that sounding board, but I don't see what he does on this roster.
Yeah, and I agree with you, too, about Trubisky. I mean, just I feel like if they were going to pick up the fifth-year option on Trubisky, they would have told us by now. If they were to pick up that fifth-year option, it would pay Mitch, I think, $24 million, though, and I just don't think they're prepared to do that at this point.
They told us that on January 1 in past years, that they're taking up the fifth-year options with certain players. Or, on the other hand, with Kyle Fuller a few years ago, they said right away, the end of the season, they weren't picking up that fifth-year option. So I think they would have done it by now. They would have made it clear that they were doing it. It seems obvious that they're not taking that option at this point.
Yeah, and we have been, you know, for the record, for people listening, every chance that we have had, at least one time, somebody has asked Ryan Pace, what about the option? It was asked again last night, and it was a big, you know, we're worried about the draft right now, and we're not ready to reveal that, or I'm sure they've decided, so it's just a matter of putting on the record. All right, let's move on. Something you said about Jalen Johnson that's really interesting. You even think that he would have lasted beyond 50, and that's obviously because of the shoulder surgery, and maybe I've been talking myself into this, that the shoulder is not that big of a deal because he played through a torn labrum last year. He's only missed one game in the last 2 years. But do you look at this a little bit more critically, as in that he is not somebody who will necessarily stay healthy at the NFL level?
I'd never like to speculate or say somebody is, you know, an injury-prone player. You hear that term a lot because oftentimes these injuries are fluky things and you're playing a violent game. They're just going to happen. You're not going to be able to avoid those injuries unless you're really fortunate. But you're talking about a player in this case who's had three different shoulder surgeries on each shoulder. It's obviously something you're concerned about. It's something that has to really be red flags. And if you were to say going into that pick 50, they were drafting a corner, I would have thought it'd be Trayvon Diggs out of Alabama, who's played higher level of college football than Utah. He's got a really accomplished track record, and the Bears have a good track record of drafting out of Alabama, clearly. But I was surprised it was Jalen Johnson at that point. And the medicals are obviously concerning. I don't know if it means he's going to be an injury-prone player moving forward. I don't know if the correlation is there, but it's something you have to be aware of, certainly. So, and especially in this kind of climate where teams are struggling to get the medical confirmations they needed. Ryan Pace said things checked out, and he felt really strongly about it. And Jalen Johnson said it's not really an issue, but I guess we won't know until July when they're ideally getting ready for training camp at that point, and we'll hear whether Johnson's starting the season on pup or whether he's able to be out there right away.
Talking to Chris Emma, 670thescore.com. Read his stuff on 670thescore.com. All sorts of good bear stuff that you could read right now, even if you would like. And I know, Emma, that you are one who has probably even more than others of us has paid very close attention to the Notre Dame program. What do you think about Cole Kmet, and how quickly will he make an impact on the Bears?
You know, he was such an obvious fit for the Bears, and you heard Ryan Pace speak glowingly about Cole Kmet and what he brings to the table. Matt Nagy called him RoboCop because he can do it all. The thing that stands out about me with Cole Kmet is the red zone threat. This is a guy who doesn't have a ton of experience because last year was his first true season as that top tight end for Notre Dame, which has a terrific track record producing tight ends. But he was such a natural fit. This guy was a two-sport standout who could have been going pro in baseball as well and been a high pick there in the MLB draft. But the Bears had their eyes on him for a while. They got good relationships in Notre Dame, and they were really able to form those scouting convictions pretty easily. Obviously a terrific kid. You like the character, all that. But, you know, you need to obviously address this tight end position too. And I like the fact that they went for this, that they believe in Cole Kmet, because he seems like such a terrific fit for this offense. He's going to be that natural Y position guy. They like the way that he can block, which they have been looking for that kind of blocking tight end as well, in addition to somebody who can be that dynamic threat in Matt Nagy's offense. And I like the way that Nagy last night on the phone with us, Mark, said that you can't really look past the Y position because the U position is so important. They want to make Cole Kmet and Jimmy Graham kind of a tandem at tight end, and throwing Demetrius Harris in there as well, who they really like, plus other guys like Ben Broniker, for example. They like the idea of using that tight end position differently, where last season they didn't really have any tight end they could count on. Now they have multiple different options. I think you're going to see a lot more two tight end sets in this offense now with Nagy leading it. And I think it also shows a lot of confidence in new tight ends coach Clancy Barone, who, you know, obviously I don't think Kevin Gilbride really deserved to be fired after last season, but right. You look at Barone's track record developing tight ends, that's going to mesh really well with Cole Kmet.
Yeah, and I like what you're saying, too, about the rest of the tight ends room. Now we can mention those other guys because you have Cole Kmet. You can mention the other guys, and it puts everybody in perspective. Bears fans, they don't have to go crazy now when they hear Jimmy Graham's name. Demetrius Harris, you mentioned Ben Broniker. I'll also raise you a Jesper Horsted and a J.P. Holt. Suddenly, it puts all,
you got a few more
all
left.
Those guys. Oh, yeah. Let's see. Can I name the rest? Adam Shaheen.
It's like
Eric
a sporkle quiz.
But who? Oh, Sporkle Quiz. I thought that was the name of a guy. What about Borkle Quiz? I think I came pretty close to naming all of the Bears tight ends, but now you can say, okay, now I don't have to worry if Jesper Horsted doesn't develop into a great U tight end. Now I don't have to worry if J.P. Holtz is not the future of the Bears. I don't have to worry if Adam Shaheen is on the roster or if he's not. And I certainly don't have to worry about Jimmy Graham getting the bulk of the load. It puts everybody's jobs back in perspective, and it lines things up a little bit better, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, I think too much was made out of the fact that Cole Kmet was the 10th tight end on their roster. They're going to be releasing some. I think you look at Adam Shaheen as a naturally expendable guy because he's not fit at all in that Y spot. I think he could be expendable as soon as the next couple days, frankly. We'll see how that plays out. They'll probably go into the season carrying five or six tight ends, including, you know, that one or two on the practice squad. They look at this position as valuable, obviously, in special teams, too. I don't know if Komet's, he's certainly not going to be a key special teamer, but Ben Broniker will. Jesper Horsted will. Some of these other guys, J.P. Holtz kind of stepped in as that fullback, H-back type player. He'll play special teams as well. There's a lot of use for these guys, even if you are carrying six. It sounds like a lot, but it's really not that much when you think about the special teams and the other impact there. But yeah, you hit on it too. Somebody like Cole Kmet pushes Jimmy Graham's role and importance down a notch, and really with the way that he should be down a little bit of a notch at 33 years old and coming off some unproductive seasons. He doesn't need to be that go-to top tight end. That's Cole Kmet now, and you should be expecting a lot of that out of this guy. We heard Ryan Pace say that was the top guy on the board. They didn't want to trade down. They passed on a lot of other really talented players at that time. Yeah, you should be really demanding a lot of Cole Kmet. He's a terrific story. A kid who grew up a Bears fan, grew up living in Arlington Heights now, grew up in Lake Barrington, same Viator product. You really want to root for this kid, but Chicago needs him badly to pan out.
Yeah, 43 catches, 515 last year, six touchdowns, a huge game against Georgia. Missed some games with a collar. Actually, I think wasn't the Georgia game at his first game back from the collarbone injury where he had nine catches, 108 yards? Yeah.
Yep, he was coming off an injury in August, probably back a little bit sooner than he should have been for that Georgia game. But, you know, talking about facing a dominant SEC defense, he was dominant for Notre Dame's offense in that game.
Yeah, he was. I mean, and those are like legitimate areas where one can look and say, yeah, that's a good product. All right, let's move on from Cole Kmet. We talked about Jalon Johnson. Let's go all the way down to offensive line. And this doesn't necessarily have to be about the two prospects, Arlington Hambright and Lechavius Simmons, because, I mean, they're seventh rounders, which are the biggest of mysteries sometimes on a roster. But how do you think the offensive line configures going into next season?
You know, Mark, I thought in the second round they could be looking at an offensive lineman and maybe shake things up a bit, but they look at Jermaine Ifedi and Jason Spriggs as these developmental guys. It's a low-cost, potential high-reward fit. Talking about a guy in Ifedi who was a first-round pick a few years ago, Spriggs an early second-round pick a few years ago. The Bears really believe in both of these guys in terms of filling depth and stepping in. It sounds like Ifedi's going to get that first look at right guard. I think it'll be his job to lose at this point, but they're also looking for somebody like an Alex Bars or Rashad Coward to kind of step up after developing last season. That's the way it's going to shake out on that right side of the line. Bobby Massey's entering a really important season. He's got three more years left on his deal, but he could easily be gone after next season, and they can cut him without any kind of cap hit still left or guaranteed money still left. Charles Leno had a really disappointing last season, and he can restructure his contract and buy himself a little bit more leeway, but and also help the Bears' cap situation immensely in this point. But he's entering a key season. And then James Daniels, of course, really took a step back in his second year and obviously bumped out of the center spot, moved back to left guard. It was disappointing all around for Daniels. So you're looking more from that group as a whole. And we heard Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace discuss it. They really believe Juan Castillo is going to elevate the rest of that bunch.
It's interesting you say that about the Juan Castillo, because when Harry Hiestand was hired, he was kind of tasked with that same job. And people talk about Castillo and him being a fiery guy and getting in your face. Guess what? Harry Hiestand was like that too. I watched Harry Hiestand very closely in my sideline work, and he was a yeller. He was a get in your. We remember some moments in Bourbonnais where Harry Hiestand, man, he'd get on his guys, man. He was a fired up guy, territorial, sort of like Juan Castillo. So maybe Juan Castillo was great. I don't know. Maybe Harry Hiestand was great. I don't even know. But I'm just trying to figure out how is Juan Castillo going to make a difference as opposed to Harry Hiestand unless they are completely changing the system, the offense that they run, or the way they actually do business?
I wish I had an answer for you there because I thought the same thing. I mean, everybody who's played under Harry Hiestand, including players on this current Bears offensive line, have raved about him. And it's not, you know, just sucking up to the coach. It's legit. They believe in this guy. Everybody touts what he's done at every level and really developing offensive linemen. This guy's one of the best offensive line coaches in all of football. So you hear Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace discuss the impact Juan Castillo can have. How much different can it be? It's a really legitimate question. I want to know what's different about their styles and how they feel Castillo and the changes in the scheme are going to reveal the best of this group that took a major step back, because it wasn't Harry Hiestand's fault that this offensive line wasn't blocking the way it should have, that so many of these guys regressed and the unit as a whole took a step back. Hiestand took the blame for it because he can't fire all five offensive linemen, but it wasn't Hiestand's fault. Castillo comes in renowned for his work. He's been really highly touted, and in particular his work in getting a run game established. But I don't think it was Hiestand's fault that the run game wasn't going well last year. That starts with Matt Nagy. I think the offensive line's play starts with this team and truly committing to a ground-and-pound game. We're getting these guys active in the trenches, getting them run-blocking more, and really more aggressive with this play calling here. It starts with Nagy, and then it has that trickle-down effect to this rest of this group. And then you'll see if the rest of this offensive line elevates and this group plays better, but maybe have one or two individuals lagging a bit, then you know who's guilty and who you need to be really pressing or looking to part ways with after this season.
Mark Rohde talking to Chris Emma here on 670 The Score. Fifth round pick, 173 overall. The Bears go and get a 4.38 40-yard dash man, the wide receiver Darnell Mooney out of Tulane. They got their speed guy with Taylor Gabriel having been released. They have so many guys that are similar, the possession big-bodied receivers. Darnell Mooney is a little bit different. Emma, will he make the roster, and will he play a part on it this season? Is he ready yet, or is that a project?
I think of all the guys drafted on day three, that's the one you're saying that's an impact player for next season. And all due respect to Travis Gibson, who I think is going to play a nice role on the defensive side of the football. But Matt Nagy loves having speed to use in different unique ways. He's going to find something for Darnell Mooney to do. Obviously, there's some things he needs to work on, and he's going to be developing as a true wide receiver. But you heard the way that Nagy gushed about Mooney's route running and the way that the route running creates just natural speed, how those two elements play hand in hand with each other. The way that Nagy spoke so highly of Mooney lets me know he's going to have some kind of unique role, whether that's within the base offense and within certain packages, or whether that's just kind of unique little looks and things you want to produce. You saw it in Kansas City, the way that when Nagy was there, and even afterwards with Andy Reid calling that offense and Eric Bieniemy, the way that they're able to just find guys, plug them into roles, and get them open, Mooney's going to have some kind of role, and he's going to be a unique piece for that offense.
Yeah, 5'11", 175, so you know, in the shorter mold as a senior, played in 13 games, 48 catches, 713 yards, and 5 touchdowns to go with that. So you add him to a bunch of, you know, I would say unsure things right now in that wide receivers room. We don't have no idea what Riley Ridley is as a pro at this point. Anthony Miller, I think he's going to be good based on what he did in his rookie year in the second half of last year. But I don't know. I mean, like Wims and Ridley, they're going to be playing for jobs, I think, this year with that wide receivers room getting busy. Do you agree?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, those are no longer developing players. Certainly, Javon Wims will be entering his third season. I guess Ridley's got kind of another year of growth, and being pushed and probably yelled at a lot by Mike Furry, but those are players that they counted on as developing young players and guys they want to see emerge. And Anthony Miller for his spot too, third-year guy. You saw him turn it on late last season, and really the numbers reflected it. That was the reflection of learning his routes, mastering this offense a little bit better. Frankly, he really struggled to know his assignments, and it was really kind of having issues with route running and the basic stuff that he should have been passed in his rookie season, after his rookie season. He entered last season as a player who could have been a breakout guy in this offense, and he really struggled the first 8 or 9 games of the season, and then picked it up from there. It'd be nice if Miller converges that top target alongside Robinson, obviously, Robinson being the number one. They need that complimentary guy who's going to draw the attention away from Robinson. Miller needs to build off the end of last season and emerge as that player going forward.
All right, a couple quick hits before I let you go. Emma, are they still going to get an extension done with Allen Robinson? Because we haven't heard of anything about that in a while.
Yeah, I think it ultimately will happen, but I don't think it's going to be immediate. That might be one closer to the start of the season, as we've seen before, right before Labor Day. But the key here is how they restructure those deals. They have to restructure at least 2, probably 3 different contracts as such, where they can offer Robinson what he deserves. And for Robinson, a guy who is 26 years old, coming off a big season, I would blame him if he sets the bar high and looks toward free agency as the threat to leaving the Bears.
Last thing, give me 10 quick facts on Latavius Simmons. Go.
Bears.
Latavius Simmons, I'll give you one. He went to Tennessee State. You know who else went there? Richard Dent, the sack man, 1985 Chicago Bear. Yes. So go. Feel free to write around that, Emma.
I think you're much deeper in Latavius Simmons' stats and facts than I am.
Well, he did say this to all of us in the conference call. I thought he had one of the great quotes of anybody this entire NFL draft when he said, "I'm a bloody your nose type of player."
Oh, man. This makes me want to watch football right now.
I just got goosebumps. I had to drink some of my coffee to settle myself down there. Emma, you're the best, man. Thanks for coming on, bro.
Take care, buddy.
All right. That is the Scores, Chris Emma. He really writes excellent stuff. You should read him every day on 670thescore.com. You could find that man on Twitter as well, at Chris Emma, I think. I'm totally making that up. I think that's what it is. Just, you'll find him. You'll find him on Twitter. Chris Emma is my guy. He covers the Bears every day. So go check him out. I think we're taking a break here, Chen. I don't know. Mike?
No,
Mike?
Go ahead. Hal? Take it to the top here, Mark. Okay, you got a couple more minutes. You're fine.
Hal, help. I'm all alone. Okay. I do want to talk a little bit about two of the guys that we didn't go too in-depth with Emma on, and those are defensive end Trevis Gipson. It's a P, by the way. I know people think it's Gibson. It's Gipson. And Kendall Vildor, a great Pat Summerall name. Intercepted by cornerback Kendall Vildor. But the defensive end, Trevis Gipson, make no mistake about it, this is a project guy. I don't think he's going to be somebody that's going to come in and be part of the rotation next year, especially, I mean, he's learning under the right guys. There's no doubt about that, and Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn. But, you know, you still have some other developing players. I don't know where he fits in with somebody like Isaiah Irving if he moves ahead of him. I doubt it. They like Irving, and Irving is a guy who still has some developing to do. James Vaughters was a guy. I don't know if you remember James Vaughters. He was a guy who was really good during the preseason last year in Bourbonnais, and then got on the field a little bit during the year as well. So, yeah, I mean, they're stacking players at that position. But Gipson, 6'4", 268. He did have 8 sacks last year for Tulsa. And, yeah, he's the guy that – and yes, you will hear this a lot. He went to the Von Miller camp, so that's where he takes his cues from. The Bears traded up to get Gipson, giving up the 2021 fourth-rounder to, of course, the Minnesota Vikings. The Minnesota Vikings were open for business for 155 this year, but the Minnesota Vikings with their 15 draft picks. And we will – by the way, we will talk about – we'll find out what in the world the Vikings are doing with all those picks and what it all means, if it's quantity over quality or what the case is, at 5 o'clock, as we'll talk to Arif Hassan, who covers the Minnesota Vikings for the Atlantic or the Athletic. But yeah, so that's the deal on Trevis Gipson. Kendall Vildor is interesting because, you know, it's it's really, it obviously is hard to get a true read on these guys when you hear from the GM and the coach of any team, because of course they drafted them, they are their guys, so they're going to say nothing but good things. The concern about Vildor, if you want to call it that, is, you know, 5'11", 190, he has been thought of as an inside guy at the NFL level. However, Nagy and Pace said that he's a guy that could play inside or outside in terms of covering guys. He went to Georgia Southern, two picks and six pass breakups last year. He's fast too, man, 4.4 40, and a really impressive vertical at 39.5, if you like such things. So he is, Kindle is what we call an athlete. There's no doubt about it. He seems like that guy will fit in perfectly as a special teams type of gentleman right off the bat. So, you know, we'll see if that's where they work him in. It's very busy in that secondary, the logjam of guys that exist right now in terms of getting playing time. And if you even want to talk about if Vildor is used on the inside right away, he's got two guys ahead of him right now in Buster Skrine and then Duke Shelley, who is one of the Bears' late round draft picks last year, who I know the Bears want to see more from going into this year. So I would just put him down as circle Kindle Vildor and say he's interesting because he's super athletic and he's got a chance because of that to be an impact guy on special teams. I don't expect him to make an impact on actual legitimate defensive series, but we shall see. A lot of people texting into about the the offensive line and the lack of movement that has been made so far, if you want to say even in this offseason or in the draft. You had the 2 7th-rounders in Arlington Hambright and Lechavius Simmons. But beyond that, it looks to me like I think there's going to be one change made on the offensive line for the Bears this year, and that will be at right guard, where I think it sounds to me like Jermaine Ifedi is going to get the first crack at starting at that right guard position. So you'll have James Daniels and Jermaine Ifedi as your guards. I do believe Cody Whitehair will be back in the middle again, even if that's not ideal. And then you'll have Charles Leno Jr. and Bobby Massey on the right side as the other tackle. And that the only reason I think Ifedi is going to be is basically what Ryan Pace said in calling Rashad Coward a work in progress. I don't know that they want to go into this season continuing on with a, you know, supposed work in progress. I think Rashad Coward fits perfectly as a depth guy at this point and continuing to develop. But Ifedi, a one-year contract with the Bears, so you plug and play him this year, and then maybe you get gold out of those two guys, Arlington Hambright and Lechavius Simmons. It's possible that one of those guys makes it or catches on, but in the 7th round, just going on that alone, you have to assume that they probably are going to take a little while before you're going to trust them on a team in the Bears, which I think will be competing for the playoffs again. From the 4-1-4, to me, it was clear last year that the Bears didn't necessarily quit, but they weren't playing hard either. Sort of a natural reaction to the play caller calling 50 to 55 plays a game. I don't really see the play caller's philosophy changing this year. That's interesting. I understand what you're saying, because Matt Nagy, you know, if there's one thing that's been about Matt Nagy in his 2 years, for better or for worse, and I think to some degree in 2019 for worse, he was stubborn to his playbook. He stuck with his scheme despite not having necessarily all the weapons he needed to continue to run that scheme. It worked in year one, and the trick plays worked and all of that, but you know, the offense still was not hefty in his first year either. They don't go to the playoffs in 2018 if you didn't have an elite defense, which they did. Last year, those things didn't work, and it took Matt Nagy until after the New Orleans game, where they had the historically bad running day, to finally change things, where he added the extra offensive lineman, where all of a sudden a J.P. Holt pops up out of nowhere, and you have fullbacks blocking, and the Bears are actually attempting to run the football. It took that to get Matt Nagy to change, and I actually asked him, Matt Nagy, at the combine, you know, are you willing to change your playbook or your way of doing things, you know, going into this year? And he said, absolutely, yes. And he says, like, good coaches have to be able to do that, have to be able to change things around. Like, he's not going to completely change his identity and have a completely different offense with a completely different language. But I know people are going to not believe me when I say this, I do think they will run the football more this year. I do think there will be a more suitable scheme in which to run the football. Last year, like, that just didn't exist. Last year. So I still think Matt Nagy is a really good head coach. I think he's a really good play caller. I just think he was a little bit stubborn to sticking to his playbook and his philosophies, and maybe wasn't paying enough attention to the players that existed, or he was just, you know, he was like, damn it, I'm going to make this work. I'm going to, yes, you can do this. And then there were just players that weren't capable of running everything that he did last year. From the 708 playoffs, ? So Nagy's going to run the ball? ? It's a serious text message right there. A total of 8 question marks right there. Yeah, I do think he's going to run the ball more. I still think they will pass the ball more than they will run the ball, especially if Nick Foles is your quarterback, because then I think that Matt Nagy realizes that he can start to do some of the things that he's wanted to do all along. But yeah, I mean, I think that Matt Nagy, even Matt Nagy says this all the time, that he's still learning, that he's a new head coach. He has coached in the National Football League for 2 years, had pretty good tutorials in his life and pretty good experience as a play caller and an understudy to some pretty good coaches, but he's still learning. And any coach, you know, good coaches or managers in any sport, the best thing they can do is adjust, whether it is adjusting within a game, adjusting year to year, recreating yourself. And I think Matt Nagy is probably going to have to do that to some degree, and I think that that's one thing that he's learned. All right, we are going to take that break right now, and when we do come back, we are going to bring in from The Athletic our guy, and I'm searching for his. Oh, yes, it is Arif Hassan. He is from The Athletic. He covers the Minnesota Vikings. We'll find out what the Minnesota Vikings are doing with the 15 draft picks that they had. That is next on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.